Hi. This week is a bite-sized dot to dot where I'm chatting to my friend and fellow psychologist Lou Jones. We start off by talking about how difficult it is to plan during COVID and the impacts of that on performance. And then I tell Lou that the video isn't actually recording.
Especially. It's an interesting one because we're all planning in the sporting world for this return to play, return to training, yet government guidelines change. So we're all kind of working on a plan, which again is a movable plan. And me and my team are constantly in conversations with athletes and coaches with constant questions around when are we going to be back in the building? When are we going to be back training? When are we going to get back on program? And no one really has an answer. And then when they do have an answer, they're like, some answers have been, probably in the next 6 to 8 weeks or in the next 3 weeks. So people then work towards that. But then when you get to 3 weeks, what people know now is different to what people knew the 3 weeks before. And actually, yeah, that goalpost has changed again.
Yeah. I mean, it's bananas, isn't it? It's that thing of we look back on 3 weeks after 3 weeks and everything's different to how it was at the beginning of that 3 weeks, even in terms of what we were planning or expecting.
If you're moving to a new house or a new job, or you're looking, your future's going to change, you're looking to what that future's going to look like, you plan for it, you build up a good idea of what that house might look like and you build it, or you know what it looks like before you move in, or the job, you go, you know where the building is, you know the environment, you know how they work.
You know the date you're due to be there, you know who your boss is going to be.
Yeah, so many people talked about this new normal, but no one knows or has thought about what it's going to look like or how it could look. So therefore, people can't buy into it. They can't engage in it. They can't go, oh, that sounds great. I want some of that. I want to be part of that.
Mm. And in terms of leadership, there's if you ever run a change program within an organization and you're sort of advising leaders, to build the picture, the vision, reassure people, give as much clarity as you can. Yeah. And that hasn't really happened, partly because the government have been feeling their way along as it has happened. But then you look to other governments, like speaking to our friend Sean in New Zealand, and Jacinda Ardern has, I know it's a different situation, it's a different country, smaller population, but she's given as much clarity as she can, and she's provided as much reassurance as she can. And when I was talking to Sean, and you know how naughty Sean is, I mean, that's one of the things I love about her. Yeah. And when she was in Switzerland, she was breaking the rules daily, wasn't she? She'd be like putting her bin in the wrong place or walking down the road where she wasn't meant to. And it was all a bit fun. But she said that she feels like there's a sort of in New Zealand, there's been this strict teacher in charge, but she's wanted to follow the rules because she's felt safe and she's known what's happening. And I think no one can provide the answers. No one can say it's going to be this in 3 weeks. We don't know if a second wave is going to hit. We don't know when. We don't know all those things. But we're lacking some of the basic clarity that I feel like we should be getting to help people through. Like you say, to be able to say, that's what my house looks like. That's where I'm moving to. The date of my move might change because the mortgage might not come through as expected. But I've got certain things that I can hang my hopes on and I can build a picture towards. For athletes, that must be really hard because... Well, we talked about this a bit before, didn't we? But athletes, the whole life is about training. And if you're doing a sport which involves training with other people or playing with other people or competing, that's just, the rug's just taken out from under you. You can't just sit at home and do virtual work, can you?
Well, it's also that when you're training towards a goal.
A goal, yeah.
And it's and they've always had goals. When the next competition is, when the next Europeans, when the next Worlds, Commonwealth Games, Olympics, Paralympics. And that's not there right now. There's no competitions out there. And when there are competitions for some sports, like I guess tennis and football, it's a different environment.
Yeah, it's totally different. I mean, behind closed doors is just not how these people have learnt to perform, actually.
Well, I know. I mean, it's similar to you and me. I mean, I didn't come into my job because I really wanted a desk job. I became a sports psychologist because, you know, I'm in various different environments on a regular basis, working with lots of different people. But now I've got a desk job.
Yeah.
That's at my desk all day, every day. It's driving me nuts. You know, so people are in different environments now that weren't normal, that they haven't chosen to be in. And we don't know what any new environment would be to know whether you want to choose to be in it or not.
Yeah. And there's also the fact that people hit crisis, so crisis point, whether that was, I mean, talking to universities, for example, they're having to slash budgets and there's huge amounts of work they're having to get through in organisations of all sorts in a really short time scale. But the thing is that was crisis mode. So crisis mode was we sit in front of our computer for 12 hours on Zoom and we don't move and we have all these meetings and we make these decisions. But we're not actually in crisis mode now, but people have got into the habit of doing that. And so people sit on Zoom for 12 hours and they don't have time to walk around, to look out the window, to go to the loo, to have a lunch break, or to actually to have the time that they would normally have.
I was like back to back in these virtual meetings all day, and I got to the last one, and I always have a 12 to 1 and a 1 till 2, and a lot of people are in both. And at the end of the last one, anyone was like, so any other business? I said, yeah, would it be okay if we just moved this meeting half an hour later? Because lots of us are in the 12 to 1.
Mm.
And the 1 till 2, and then we've got a chance to have lunch, have a wee, head outside for like a little brisk walk and come back again. And you can see everyone's like, yeah, great, brilliant idea. It's taken us 13 weeks to come up with that one.
The fact you're doing it's brilliant because it's the same everywhere, and no one has the time to reflect on what isn't working in order to change it. You know, because that's what I was saying to one exec who I coach, and she was saying, I was saying, you know, are you exercising, all those sorts of things? She does a morning walk, but she's on calls, and then she's in front of the computer, and then she takes over from her husband at 6 with the kids. She's got 3 small boys. She then puts them to bed and then sits down and works again. And so I said, so you have absolutely no time to reflect on anything? No. And it's that time, even just walking to your car and opening the door, even if you're on a work call, when you're in the car, that's time to reflect. Or parking your car and walking to your office, or walking to the train, or whatever you're doing, that's time to reflect and daydream. And, you know, I was interested in research when I was doing the book that's about to come out, and we daydream 50% of the time, and that daydreaming is imagining creativity, but it's also reflection and learning and getting our life in order and working out what's working, what's not. We're not conscious of that a lot of the time, but we need that time and that space to do that. And at the moment people just don't have it, but they don't realize they don't have it because they don't have time to reflect.
I mean, it is an interesting one, isn't it? Because I guess people are loving the fact they don't have to commute.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, their commute is now 5 minutes from bedroom. Well, not even 5 minutes, is it? It's like half a minute from bedroom to office or wherever they're working.
Well, some people, look, you know, Chris works with a single, live in London in a flat. And a small flat for one person means you don't really move much at all.
Yeah.
And as you and I know, we need that movement. It was you that introduced me to the mental health 5 a day.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. I love it. And I can't believe that it's not more recognised and celebrated because it's such a lovely way of looking at carrying out mental health.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing. And this is, I don't know how you found this, but your world is skewed in how you think, and what you know is skewed by the things you come into interacting with on a daily basis, right? And our worlds have become a lot smaller. So how do we figure out what's going on in the world out there? Well, we go on to the media or social media to find out. And those platforms are obviously quite biased. You don't know what the truth is.
No, and you're being filtered by the fact that you looked at this piece of news before, so therefore they'll feed you a similar piece of news now, when actually you want to know what else is out there.
And it's really negative.
Yeah.
You know, there must be so many good deeds, so many good things happening on a regular basis that we don't know about. What we hear is about the worst parts of society or the worst things that are happening.
It's very true.
And you feel the world might be falling apart.
Yep. So I know quite a few people don't like Twitter. I'm a bit anti-social media, but I use it because of books and stuff. But on Twitter, there's a guy who I've got to know called Giles Paley Phillips. He's so kind and he's so nice, and it's not cheesy. And it doesn't feel inauthentic. It feels completely genuine. And I love seeing his tweets because he sets off a chain of positive with other people as well.
Yeah.
And he has this banter with Julia Bradbury as well. And her and him got this happy, positive banter. They've started doing, I mean, he runs his own podcast, but they've started doing a bit of a podcast together. And I think, where we need more of that. But the only way I happened to fall upon him, I didn't know him before, I sort of got to know him now. But if people don't like Twitter, I was talking to someone else that I coach who really needs to be on social media. I mean, it's something I talk against in my book most of the time, but she really needs to be on it. And she said, I really just don't like Twitter. It's so negative. It's so this, that, and the other. And I was like, I don't find it like that. But it's because I just happened upon this one positive person, and the people that follow him are positive. So then you've happened upon more positive people. But if you don't, if I hadn't found that little chink, it would have all been the same as what she was getting, which was just negative stuff. So yeah, it's not good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to, like you said, if you haven't got the time to reflect, and when you do try and work out what's happening in the rest of the world, you're getting painted a pretty negative picture. That's quite a harsh bubble to be in. Mm. Where there's no certainty whatsoever.
Yep.
Right now.
And then if you're living on your own,
yeah,
you have no one to check in with you either. So if you don't have kids or a partner or... if you're just on your own, hopefully you're talking to friends, but possibly not. No one is saying to you, this isn't actually that bad. This isn't how the world is. You're not having that conversation to say, do you know what? It's going to get better. So it's not, as you say, it's not a good bubble to be in, is it?
No. And I mean, I think there's been a whole heap of work. I mean, when I go onto Facebook, there's constant messages of it's okay to be not okay, and lots of great quotes about you're doing great, just keep going. And I love all those. I think there's lots of things out there, but again, maybe because that's the niche I'm in that I look at on Facebook. I think there's a greater focus on people's well-being. And I think I'd like to think if anything comes out of this, it's an understanding of the impacts of these things on that and the importance of looking after yourself. Mm. That maybe people can make that decision, okay, I'm not going to work crazy hours because I actually need to have time to myself, to reflect, to daydream. I am going to spend more time with my kids because I've really enjoyed that during my lockdown period.
I think that's something that people have been surprised by, is how they haven't had constant arguments with their partner, and they have actually really enjoyed being with their partner and their kids. You know, people have been, they just, maybe it's people I've talked to, but they're quite pleasantly surprised. Because if you predicted that beforehand and you said, we're going to be locked down for 13 weeks, a lot of people have gone, oh my God, I can't stay in the same house as my partner for 13 weeks. But people, apart from, I mean, there are some awful stories, and I have someone I know who they decide to get divorced just before lockdown, and then they're locked down together. That's not pleasant. But yeah, I think psychology's gained more profile over the last few years in the mental health space. But I think you're right. This gives it not just the mental health space, but the well-being space. And the bit that you and I have always talked about before is that psychology is not just about the mental health aspect, nor is it just about the performance aspect, which is what you and I tend to work on with people. But it's all that in between. It's decision making. It's it is daydreaming, reflecting. It's how our brain works and how behaviour impacts us. And it's much, much broader. And I'd like to think that people want to understand that more of themselves and of other people, as well as wanting to take better care of themselves.
So what we'll be looking at in work when staff and athletes and coaches return is that the psychology team, within conjunction with like performance lifestyle and some of the other aspects of our institute, is doing a piece of work on kind of debriefing the lockdown period and drawing out the learnings that people have gone through. What can they take from this time? So a piece on the psychological growth through trauma. Mm-hmm. And actually, what can you take from this experience is going to help you move forward? What have you learned about yourself? What have you learned about the people around you that you want to spend more time with, or people that you want to spend less time with? What have you learned more about the priorities that you have in your life now that are really important to you? You've really had a good think about that. The new skills you've learned, how can you move those forward in this new environment that we're moving into? And how are we going to take all of that and really have thrive as we move into the future?
I think that's fantastic. And I think that's something it's worth everyone doing if they can. And what the people we work with benefit from is it comes in a structured form where you're guided through it. And but for people who are sort of sitting at home listening, they don't necessarily have their own personal psychologist helping them, but the framework you just described is, I think, perfect for anyone to look through and sort of work through. Maybe something we can pop up on the website.
We can absolutely look at that. I think it's something that everyone can benefit from, and you'll find that people react in different ways to trauma or to an experience like this. And I think what's interesting about this experience is it's not just a one-off crisis. This is like a sustained period of lockdown with no end point that we can work with.
And we don't actually know what the psychological impact is going to be on a lot of people of this until later on, because it takes time to work through and become apparent. I mean, it's interesting because on another podcast that I'll be putting up, a friend of mine who suffers from PTSD was saying how when one particular trauma that was set off, that contributed to his PTSD, when he was reporting the disaster to his team, the difference in responses was so interesting, because he said, there's one woman who just burst into tears straight away, cried. And one guy who sort of almost shrugged it off, even though it was a friend of his who had died, but had a breakdown a few weeks later. Mm. And I think you know, under pressure in a work environment or in a sporting environment, we all behave differently and it depends on our personality and all that sort of stuff. But when you look at trauma specifically, it creates an exaggerated version of behaviour and mood and psyche that you can't necessarily predict in anyone.
Yeah, and like you said, there's a timeline and people will be at different points of that timeline. And I think that there's about four different ways of responding. You can either kind of go through some kind of stress response, post-traumatic stress. You can have a surviving response and you just kind of limp along. It could be more kind of everything's just the same, or the people then who actually grow and develop from this experience. And that would be, like you said, dependent on people's personalities, their support mechanisms, what skills they've already got in their armory.
Yep.
And it will be interesting to see how people come out of this. I guess so. I'm conscious of the analogy that we continue to use in work, and it is that we're all in the same storm, but we're all in different boats.
Yeah, I like that.
So, and I think that each boat is so different from the next boat.
Mm.
And for really, I think for us all, we need to understand our own boats and take time to understand others rather than quickly kind of
judging
and judge and look at someone else's boat and you're not doing enough to help our boat, and
well, you're not doing it the right way, or
yeah,
you're rowing the wrong way.
Yeah,
yeah,
people don't understand someone else's boat.
Yeah,
and I think we do need to take more time to understand that and be kind to others.
No, I think you're right. I think the danger is as well, there's a fine line between platitudes and substance. So I think I totally agree, be kind, but you know, people will sort of hashtag be kind, which is a nice thing to do, but is there substance behind it? Do people actually think about what that means? It's not just a, hey, I look nice because I put be kind up, or I think this is a good idea, but to be honest, I'll forget about it in 5 minutes. It's something we have to carry with us, that reminder to be kind to ourselves as well as to other people. You know, everyone has negative self-talk to some degree or another.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, the thing I find with psychology as well is it's being conscious of all these things. It doesn't mean sort of constantly analysing and introspecting and what have you, but it's having just, it's sort of like tapping yourself on the shoulder every so often, just going, put your head up. Just remember what you think and what you believe, which sounds crazy, but we forget.
Yeah, and what's good about you and what you enjoy about you. And it's that stopping and pausing and understanding. And I think that's what I would always would like people to do before they do anything, is stop, pause, think about themselves and think about others.
Yeah.
The more they know about themselves, the more they can be kinder to themselves. And the more they know about others, the more, you know, empathic they can be.
Absolutely. And compassionate. Oh, I've got a whole chapter on that next book.
Oh, yes.
But you're right. It's that stop, pause. And if we go back to the Zoom conversation, I know not everyone works in a job where they've been on Zooms all day. Some people are furloughed. Some people have had to carry on going out to work. But for a lot of people, that Zoom, back-to-back Zoom, means there isn't a stop and pause. It's not just stop and pausing for reflecting. It's just not stopping and pausing to take a breath, even.
No, but I'll tell you what I've started doing now.
What's that?
Well, I've started taking a bit more control of those meetings. So I'm trying, I'm very much working hard. And obviously I'm saying that because it doesn't work every time, but I will leave meetings 10 minutes early.
That's good. I mean, actually that's what Libby's school have done, because they weren't having that space where normally they'd be walking between lessons, or they took 10 minutes off every lesson time.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, that's, and you doing that is great, because that will be reflected then to other people who you're working with and the people that are working for you, because you're role modelling that behaviour.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to do. what, you know, should you be there? What are you demonstrating if you're doing that? But, you know, with our work diaries, they're very much chunked into hours.
Yep.
With no time in between. Whereas at least in work, you could walk. Sorry, I had to walk between meetings.
Exactly.
Or I had to go and get a coffee at the cafe, so it will be a bit late, or whatever it is.
But there's a physical reason for it, which there isn't when you're sitting in the same place all day.
Yeah, and mixing it up. So I'm definitely going more back onto the phone.
Yeah, I'm doing that as well.
Walk and talk. Rather than video.
Yeah.
It's boundaries are super important. And it's very hard to have boundaries if you don't know yourself. It's important to you, what you value, to then know that actually sticking to your boundaries in a moment of exhaustion or pressure or is super hard unless you're pretty, you know that it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even when you know yourself well, so I think about some of the leaders I work with do know them the same way as some of the athletes you'll work with do know themselves really well, but you still need to remember. So it's this piece about remembering, and it sounds crazy. Maybe it's because my memory's so bad, that's why I come back to it. But it's even if you know that even if you know you really should go to bed at 9 because you wake up so early, regardless of what time you go to bed, you still will go to bed at 11 three nights in a row and then wake up and think, oh my God, I'm so tired.
And I'm super bad at that at the moment. Yeah,
you know, because but there's so many factors of ourselves that are so complex, aren't there? What struck me when I've been doing research and on emotional resilience is I don't know if you've heard of this, the wobble board analogy. And it's that we are on a constant wobble board with our emotional resilience. So we're constantly having to readjust.
Yeah.
And it's that constant awareness of everything, really. I mean, that's what mindfulness is about as well, isn't it? It's checking in on yourself and your breath and your body. And even the people that know themselves really, really well, I think there still needs to be, sometimes it's an external person reminding you, checking in. I mean, one guy I work with, he tells his team that they can tell him if he's tired, which sounds, you know, it sounds basic, but it's massive, because when we actually fall into that zone, I mean, we know it's sort of good, we go into what I call the reacting brain, but the sort of limbic system or whatever. When we're under pressure or tired, we aren't thinking so rationally, and so we forget all of the strategies we have in place, and we need someone else outside to tap us on the shoulder.
Lend you a cerebellum.
Yes, exactly. But you have to give them permission to do that, otherwise they'll whack your finger off when you tap them on the shoulder.
Yeah. I mean, it is that. It is just fascinating.
Hope you enjoyed today's bite-sized dot to dot. There'll be more coming up every other week between our behind-the-person interviews. For more from us, please follow on The Real Dot to Dot. It's the same for Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks so much for listening.